Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. That famous president, Dr. Franklin Roosevelt, and I am not starting very good today. Franklin Roosevelt once said, it is said, that we cannot always build the future for our youth, but we can build our youth for the future. But then the question is, how do we do this? So the way my mind thinks first is we really need to get some useful, reliable information about youth. Today we're going to look at some of the facts about teens in Anchorage and how two organizations are using this information to develop youth for the future. My guests are Deborah Williams, she's director of the Anchorage Youth and Development Coalition, Sarah Sledge, she's director of Community Action with the United Way and is also representing the Anchorage United for Youth, and Dr. Gabe Garcia of the University of Alaska Department of Health Sciences, who really was involved in analyzing a survey that got the information that we're going to be discussing today. And also, there's going to be a fifth voice that you're going to hear periodically, and that's Prentice Pemberton. Prentice is a social worker who is helping me host some of these programs, particularly the ones relating to psychosocial issues, and next week we'll be guest hosting when I am out of town. Prentice, nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks for all of you for taking the time to join me.
It's great being here. Yeah,
thanks for having us.
So I will do my best to remind listeners who's talking. And if we forget, make sure you identify yourself so we won't mess up these listeners too much out there. Well, let's start by just helping us understand a little bit about each of the organizations. Deb, you kind of got this thing started, so tell us about the coalition.
The Anchorage Youth Development Coalition, or AYDC, is a coalition of over 40 youth-serving organizations and some prominent individuals, all of whom are committed to doing what Franklin Roosevelt said, really building the assets and protective factors to allow our youth to thrive going forward. So we are focused on what are best practices, what's the information we need, how can we convene and work together to make sure that our youth have the best experience and develop the individual and group protective factors that they need to thrive as adults.
Okay. Sarah, how does your why don't you just tell us again what organizations you're representing and how you're involved?
Absolutely. I am Director of Community Action at United Way of Anchorage, and I work there in our action area of education. So trying to work with a lot of our funded partners and also partners around the community who are working to improve youth outcomes here in Anchorage. And part of that work involves our partnership with Anchorage United for Youth, which is over 40 partners involved in nonprofit work, public organizations, the businesses, and local community members, all working towards goals to make sure our youth are successful in school and in life. We have a goal of increasing the graduation rates by 2020 to 90%, and also decreasing the number of our youth who are engaged in risk behaviors like substance and alcohol use and violent behaviors. So we've been at it for many years now, and increasing our partnerships and continuing to see our numbers going in the right direction, so we're very, very optimistic.
So one of the things that I learned way back in nonprofits is it's nice to have some specific goals so that you have some way to monitor how you're doing. So it's nice to hear. Mm-hmm. These are tough businesses, the nonprofits. I don't think people who have not been involved understand how difficult, particularly from a funding standpoint,
absolutely,
because you just never know where the next dollars come from, despite all your goodwill and all the best efforts. It can be a difficult job. Dr. Garcia, how'd you get involved with these guys?
Well, like you have introduced me, I'm an assistant professor of public health at the Department of Health Sciences here at University of Alaska Anchorage. I am actually Anchorage grown. I went to high school here at Diamond High School, and so I've been a member of Anchorage United for Youth as a public health professional. And when given this opportunity to do research among Anchorage youth, I took this opportunity because this is meaningful for me. It's meaningful work because I grew up here and consider Anchorage my home.
Yeah. So all of us as adults have some bacon in this a little bit, but you also were from Anchorage as a high school student.
That's right.
Okay. Not that long ago, if I look at you. You look like a very young PhD to this old guy. So I would think that parents and schools need to be involved in a lot of this. I mean, we can't and shouldn't, and I'm sure you don't leave them out. How are they involved?
In the work that we do?
Yeah.
We've had some work with the Alaska PTA and the local PTA. We have a very close partnership with the Anchorage School District. We have for many years. The school district here does amazing work with our kids, and they're constantly improving outcomes here in Anchorage for students. But we also recognize that they can't do it by themselves. They need parents that are effective, and they need the community support that we're trying to rally around those schools so that we're wrapping around our kids and getting them all the supports they need. So we all have to be involved.
You know, this is about youth, this whole issue. And Franklin Roosevelt has said something, and it doesn't take a lot of work to find that lots of people have said that it's important to make sure that our youth and our younger individuals are growing and developing appropriately. Is that really true? Let's just ask that question.
Yes. Youth are 30% of our population here in Anchorage, but they're 100% of our future. Youth are our future. Mm-hmm. We were all youth once. We know what we inherited in terms of, you know, support, in terms of opportunity, and we can all, I think, agree that we should provide to our youth the same, if not greater, opportunity and support. We really do owe it to youth to allow them to thrive, to avoid risk behavior. We continue to get smarter about what that involves. And so just going back to the simple premise, youth are 30% of the population, 100% of the future. We all need to have a stake in our youth.
Let me remind listeners, you're listening to Line One, your health connection, and today we're talking about the survey that we're going to be discussing just shortly that has looked at some of the risk behaviors that our youths are doing, and that information is being used to improve the outcomes of youth in Anchorage and in Alaska. If you've got questions or comments about what you hear today, let me give you some contact information. Our local number is 550-8433. We also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and an email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We'll be available for the next hour at any of these ways of getting a hold of us. After that particular time, we will not be able to answer your questions. However, you can always go to alaskapublic.org and listen to this podcast or this episode of Line One, or you can listen to previous episodes. And also, there are links at alaskapublic.org to the organizations and information that we're discussing today. Dr. Garcia, let's talk a little bit about the information that we are talking about today and how it was gathered and what's the source of this information.
Sure. The data was gathered by actually the state. And the data that we're going to talk about is the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey. And the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey is a national survey. It was first conducted in 1990 across the nation, but Alaska didn't participate until 1995. And so with the participation of the state, Department of Health and Social Services, they were able to provide me with the data set to analyze, to look at the trends that we have here in Anchorage, and also to look at some of the not just risk behaviors, but also protective factors that can help influence and reduce risk behaviors.
So how is this administered? Let's get some real basic information here. How is it administered? Where is it administered?
Sure. It's administered all over the state. And within the state, Anchorage and other communities in Alaska are sampled. And within Alaska, certain schools are sampled and randomly choose students within that school. So that's basically how it's gathered. It's a self-reported survey, so students will get a survey questionnaire, and they will fill it up on their own.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some examples of the kinds of questions or the general areas that are being surveyed?
Sure. There are actually six risk behaviors that are covered in the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey. It asks questions about tobacco use, unhealthy dietary behaviors, inadequate physical activity, alcohol and other drug use, sexual behavior that contribute to unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases, and behaviors that contribute to unintentional injuries and violence. So those are the type of questions that are asked.
And you said this is a national survey. If I'm right, this was something that the Centers for Disease Control has developed and then disseminated. So this Alaska and Anchorage's data set is one of a national data set so that there can be comparisons and longitudinal looks at how things are going both locally and nationally.
That's correct.
All right.
And Thad, can I just add a little bit to what Dr. Garcia just said? This is Deborah. And the survey asks, as Dr. Garcia said, a lot about risk behavior. So it asks students, did you have a drink in the last 30 days? You know, did you binge drink? And so forth. But it also asks students about what we have referred to already as protective factors. And so it asks students, have you volunteered in the last week or helped people? Do you have adults to whom you can discuss your problems? Do you think your teachers care about you? Does the community care about you? So it also asks students about what we now find more and more to be essential to helping build resilient youths and youths who are able to avoid these risky behaviors. So it is a kind of a 1-2 survey, and that's what this beautiful analysis that Dr. Garcia and Sarah Sledge have done is they have now looked at, you know, the risk behaviors, they've looked at these protective factors, and actually there's one other aspect of the survey, so there's three, and that is youth perception of risk of these risky behaviors, their perception of how parents think about these risky behaviors, and their perception of what peers think about these risky behaviors. So there's really three aspects. And what Dr. Garcia and Sarah did was look at all three of these factors and say, so what does it mean if you have these more of these protective factors? Do the risk behaviors go down? What does it mean if, you know, there's a higher perception of risk? Do the risky behaviors go down? And for the first time ever, drum roll please, we now can see how this all comes together in Anchorage. We've never had this analysis before. And that's what's so exciting about this analysis and what Dr. Garcia and Sarah did. It's the first time, again, drum roll please, that we can present to public in Anchorage how these three things relate.
And this is a look at the, what time was it, 2005 through 2011? Is that the way I remember it?
2005 to 2011,
so
that's right.
Surveys. How many total individuals were surveyed?
For each year, well, I don't know exactly the exact numbers, but it's around, 10,000 or so.
All right. So it's a large
A large sample.
Okay. What I'm getting at is validity. People who are listening may wonder, Okay, now we got adolescents that are telling us how much sex they're having, how much they're drinking, and what makes them feel good. And so how do we know this is reasonably valid? And I use the word reasonably because nothing's entirely valid.
Right, right. So the for the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey to be reported, it has to have at least 60% participation rate.
Okay.
So if the state or specific communities in the state have less than 60%, then it is deemed unreliable and valid. So they're not even reported in terms of the rates. So fortunately, in Anchorage, at least the Anchorage sample, we have more than 60% participation from 2005 to 2011. So the results that we have are reliable and valid. And with regards to the questions, like I said in the beginning, the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey have been conducted since 1990. So there have been years of research with regards to its reliability.
Yeah, having done some of this with asthma, I know it's extremely difficult. And if you've done and never been involved, I mean, there's a lot of work that goes on exactly how a sentence, how the question is answered or asked and the words that are used so that people don't misunderstand it in different ways. So there's lots of metrics that go into making sure this is pretty clear. And then the numbers, the more numbers you get, the more reliable the information.
Right.
So that's remarkable. Sarah, are parents required to give permission for this?
So currently in Alaska, we're one of three states in the country that requires active parental consent for the survey to be administered. So a student in an Anchorage high school can't take the survey unless their parent has given active permission. They've sent back a permission slip saying, yes, my child can participate. Beyond that, the survey is completely voluntary. So even if a student's parent has given them permission, they don't have to complete the survey. It's up to them whether or not they want to and whether or not they want to answer every question. So we are one of three active parental consent states in the country.
How come we're only three are doing that?
I'm sure the other states have different reasons. I know there have been concerns about privacy, mm-hmm. confidentiality, and what we know about the way the survey is conducted is that it is confidential. There's no way to track any personal information when the survey is administered. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been some efforts to change the law into a passive consent law, where parents would still get notifications, still have the ability to say, no, I don't want my child to take the survey. And we would probably get a higher return rate if that happened. But currently we are active parental consent.
As I was looking around about this information, a question came to my mind, either something I read or somewhere else, that another bit of resistance might be from families that they believe that if we ask about behaviors such as drinking and alcohol and smoking, that the youth who is asked that question might be more likely to participate in those activities. Is that a valid concern, and how do we know?
Well, one of the things we've seen is since the survey's been administered in Alaska, for example, since 1995, the prevalence of these risk behaviors has gone down. So certainly we're not seeing evidence that those behaviors are going up as a result of this survey being in place. We also know that kids are hearing about the kinds of things that are on this survey from a multitude of other sources on TV, the internet, from their peers, just all around them. So, it's really vital that we get this information and find out, what healthy behaviors are our kids engaged in and what risk behaviors are they engaged in, so we can make effective health care and health policy decisions and really inform all of our partners into the things that we can do to better support our kids and make sure they're strong and healthy.
And this is Dr. Garcia, and I'd just like to add that, according to UNICEF, to improve something, we must first measure it.
Yep.
And there has been a study by Colby and colleagues in 1993, and it's published at the Public Health Reports, that and according to their study, there is really no evidence that voluntary responding to this question, to this risk behavior questions, actually lead to that actual behavior.
So somebody actually studied the question and
that's
to
right.
see if it happened, and there's
right.
no evidence that that happened.
Now there is also a study regarding that specific issue, and there was a review done by Fitzmore and Moore, and what they found was that the questions changed the behavior, but the problem was with the study that they've conducted is that the behaviors that they looked at, the way the questions were asked, are forward-looking or future-looking, but mm-hmm. the questions asked in the Youth Risk Behavior Survey mm-hmm. are for the past. So there is the science that Fitzman Moore are really weak.
Yeah, it gets into the details of science, and you always have the question of something else. Especially we can tell that's not true. And I think, Sarah, your point is that the evidence is by asking these questions, if they have any influence, if anything, they're helping, not causing more problems. What about the behaviors? As I listed them again for our listeners, it was tobacco use, diet, physical activity, alcohol use, sexual activity, and behaviors that might be dangerous to themselves or others. First off, I think those are things that physicians increasingly are aware of. As in this country, we're more and more healthy than we've ever been, and there are also behaviors that are very hard for physicians, in particular, to address. So these are things that should be important to the future and are outside of the realm of traditional health care. Are there other reasons these behaviors were chosen to be looked at that anybody knows off the top of their head? But that's just what the CDC has found to be.
Right.
I mean, they're high risk. If you look at kids less than 20, suicides and accidents and alcohol involved in accidents are some of the biggest reasons for them to be hurting themselves.
Well, this risk behavior questions are asked because they are related to the leading causes of death and morbidity mm-hmm. among youth. So that's the reason they're asked.
That's a better way of saying what I was trying to say. So what are some of the important findings? Let's go ahead and talk about a couple of things here.
That I would be delighted to talk about some of the findings and first put it in a strength-based perspective. Because one thing that we show is that two-thirds of Anchorage students are not currently using alcohol, and that this percentage, in fact, of not drinking has increased, the percentage of not drinking has increased from 41% in 2005 to 66% in 2011. That's a significant increase of youth not drinking. So that's very positive. Same thing. 80% of Anchorage students in traditional high schools are not binge drinking. And this percentage of students not binge drinking has increased from 72% to 79.5% between 2005 and 2011. The last statistic has to do with marijuana use. 77% of Anchorage students in traditional high schools are not currently using marijuana. And again, we have seen a little bit of improvement, some flattening out, et cetera, on that statistic. It is important, I think, to first look at these statistics from a strength basis, because one thing we know is that, and Dr. Gabe Garcia can talk about this, if you think sort of everyone's doing it or it's cool to do, that's not a positive factor. But if you really realize that a majority, and in many cases a very strong majority, of our high school youth are not engaging in these risky behaviors, that's something important for parents to emphasize, for peers to emphasize, and others to emphasize. But these statistics also show that, 25% or more of youth are engaged in risky behavior. And as you know from other programs you've had, the adolescent brain is particularly susceptible and particularly conducive to injury from drugs and alcohol in these risky behaviors. So now is the time for, individuals not to be consuming alcohol, marijuana, hard drugs, and engaging in other risky behavior. So we do want to know what helps youth avoid these risky behaviors, and unfortunately, what are some of the contributing factors to these risky behaviors, because 25% is too much.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, your thoughts?
I wanted to give a little bit of context, and these we did look at some of these trends that Deborah just spoke about earlier in the year. But one of the things Anchorage United for Youth Partners wanted to look at, we've had these strategies that we're working on in a concerted effort to, decrease the number of youth that are engaged in these risky behaviors, because we also know that that has an impact on their success in school and in life in general. And so we want to make sure the kids stay on track and that they have the highest likelihood for a successful future. So we've been looking at strategies based on increasing assets for youth, like assets like stable caring adults in their lives, supportive involved families. They've got out-of-school activities that are meaningful for them that they're engaged in. And we wanted to look at how can we increase those things so that our kids are more likely to make these positive decisions and stay in school and avoid risk behaviors. These strategies are based on a wide body of research that's been conducted nationally, building on Search Institute's developmental assets. We know that the more developmental assets kids have, the better choices they make. But we wanted to see if that was true locally and if we could support the work that we're doing locally and make sense of it. So in addition to looking at those trends for the Anchorage Youth Risk Behavior Survey results, we asked Dr. Garcia to help us look at the risk behaviors that kids were involved in, but also those protective factors that they're reporting that they have, and see if there was any correlation between the two. If a high school student says, yes, my parents talk to me about school every day, does that have an impact on whether or not they attend school? Are they getting A's and B's? Are they using drugs or alcohol? If they're engaged in out-of-school activities, does that have an impact on their likelihood of engaging in risk behaviors? And so that's why we approached Gabe to conduct the study, and we were really excited about the results. And
so let me try to clarify, make sure everybody understands.
Okay.
We've got some information about what adolescents and teens say they are doing mm-hmm. regards to six different factors.
Right.
And now you're also saying what we can do is take that information, because we're also asking about things that seem to be correlated with better grades and so forth. So we know a little bit about their family life. We must know about their grades and so forth. And we're trying now to correlate those two. So if people who have better grades or better family life have less of some of these behaviors that we're worried about, then that would give us some area to work on. Is that what we're trying to say here?
Right.
I just want to make sure everybody listening has got some. All right. So, Dr. Garcia, what did you find out?
Well, there were 7 protective factors that we tried to look at in terms of how it relates to the risk behaviors. And the 7 protective factors that we looked at include whether parents are talking with their children, teachers, whether they're encouraging their students. We also looked at whether the students are participating in after-school activities, they're doing volunteer work, so things like that. So there are 7 protective factors. And what we found is that for each increase in protective factors, for those 7, we can actually decrease risk behaviors between 14% to 40%. And so that is very significant in terms of thinking about ways to address some of the problems that we have among our youth. And so it's really important research because we have to look at protective factors as an additive sort of variable where each protective factor is important in terms of improving the health of our youth.
Prentice, you're being awful quiet over here, and you're the one mental health professional we got. What do you think about all this?
Well, I was just actually wondering about the protective factors question, because the thing that strikes me is you're talking about a kid's reporting of whether their parents are engaging in these protective factors. And I wonder how different the results would be. Is there any corresponding study that interviews parents in the same way and gets information back from them? Because I hear, you know, working in my practice every day, I have interview hundreds of kids every year, and their reporting is very, very different than their parents' reporting a lot of times.
We have one example of that, which substantiates what you said. There is a school climate connectedness survey, and there's also a survey of parents. And one of the questions was, how often do you talk to your youth about school? The parents did a pretty high, robust reporting of that, saying that they did a lot. That is inconsistent with these. These numbers are lower than what parents were reporting. We also have a group of teens at East High, and they went and they did a more informal survey of their youth peers because they thought, gee, the parents' reporting seemed high. Their more informal survey showed also that the parents' reporting seemed to be high. So, you know, who knows exactly where the truth is, although certainly what youth believe is true, is important information. So may also be a quality situation in others. One wonders what the incentive is for how you report. It's hard to imagine that youth would really have an incentive to underreport what they perceive as their parents talking to them about school every day and so forth. There may be an incentive for parents to overreport, particularly if, you know, they're talking to a live interviewer and so forth. So you can look at incentives there. As Gabe talked about, the YRBS, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, really has been tested again and again and again to try and capture, you know, good data. And the evidence seems to indicate that youth are quite accurate in how they report this data.
Okay. It's hard to believe, but we're halfway through this program already. I need to take a short break, so I want to remind listeners that you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break and then rejoin our guests, Deborah Williams, Sarah Sledge, and Dr. Gabe Garcia. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard, along with Prentice Pemberton, and hosting today's program.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to a large group here on Line 1, Your Health Connection today at KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard, and my co-host today is Pentus Primperdon. You'll hear his voice every once in a while. He's been very shy so far. Otherwise, our guests are Deborah Williams, who's director of the Anchorage Youth and Development Coalition, Sarah Sledge, director of community action with United Way, and she's also representing the Anchorage Youth, United for Youth, and also Dr. Gabe Garcia of the University of Alaska, Anchorage, the Department of Health Sciences. We're discussing what we know about teens from a large survey that's been done over a number of years throughout the country and in Anchorage, and how we use, how we acquire that information and how that information is being used, hopefully to help nurture the future for our youth. If you've got questions or comments, you can email us during the next 30 minutes or so to line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And please remember, if you're listening between 7 and 8 on Monday evening, that's a taped rebroadcast. If you want to ask questions, you're too late. But you can always go to alaskapublic.org and re-listen to the program or refer somebody to the website to listen to the program at some other time. And all of our previous interviews are archived at that location as well. That's alaskapublic.org. Dr. Garcia, you wanted to make sure we talked about perceptions. What do you mean, and who are you talking about?
So one piece of information that I didn't get to talk about a while ago is that in our research, we looked at negative perceptions of alcohol and negative perceptions about marijuana. And what we found is that negative perceptions on alcohol, those that have negative perception of alcohol are less likely to drink alcohol, less likely to binge drink, and those that report negative perceptions of marijuana are less likely to use marijuana. So another piece of information that's important as we talk about protective factors.
And what do you mean? We should keep that in mind. Where do they get the perceptions, and how does that happen?
Sure. The perceptions are the perception questions ask relates to.
I see. They're part of the questionnaire. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's part of the questionnaire.
I got you.
Right.
Okay. All right. Yes.
And I just want to emphasize how dramatic that is.
Yeah.
So the three types of perception questions are, do you think your peers think it's cool to drink, smoke, whatever?
Right.
Do your parents disapprove or approve? Mm-hmm. And do you think it's risky, mm-hmm. personally, to yourself? Mm-hmm. If, with respect to alcohol, you are a youth who thinks, my parent really doesn't disapprove, I don't think it's that risky, and my peers think it's cool. Mm-hmm. People who have those three answers, 63.5% likely to have used alcohol in the last 30 days. Mm-hmm. If you have none of those, if you think just the opposite, it's not particularly cool, because what's cool about throwing up on yourself and all that other stuff? my parents don't approve, and I think it's risky, only 9.4%. Mm-hmm. From 63.5 to 9.4%. For marijuana, same things. Goes from 41% if you don't have any of those perceptions to 3.9% if you have those perceptions. So very, very dramatic. Just like it is dramatic if you have, you know, lots of protective factors, and love to talk about that a little bit more, and also what it really means, both with respect to our community, with respect to funding decisions by our government and others. But very dramatic differences between people who have lots of protective factors and people who have very few.
The perception issue seems to me is really important, and I spaced out briefly. You're looking at parents' perception, their peer perception, and what was the third?
Your own perception.
Your
of
own
risk.
Perception. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking as a pediatrician that children grow up, and then one of the most important factors in how they view the world is what their parents are doing. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's peers. Okay, so that's where those ideas came from. And you would agree that that's where a lot of our feelings about how we view the world are coming from.
Mm-hmm. So,
and they're often ingrained early. I'm gonna be a pediatrician again, knowing about the brain. Early, the thing I've been telling my patients recently is you learn how to ride a bike, right? Well, how do you unlearn how to ride a bike? You can't. Yeah. And so, what happens very, very early sets down some very important ideas about how the world works. And so, that gets back before there's peers to parents anyway. But that's my get off my soapbox there.
Well, no, it's a good soapbox. You know, the more parents talk to their kids about about you know thinking that it's not okay to drink alcohol or to use drugs, that has a huge impact on kids. And kids understanding the risks of drug and alcohol use is extremely important. So the more we can shape those perceptions, the better. The more involved we can be in that, the better. And I just wanted to throw out a plug real quick that on www.aydc.org, all of this information lives. So you can see all of the Anchorage YRBS data, all the raw data. You can see our trends report that we published back in May. And you can see this newest report, which shows all of these crosstab analyses that we're talking about today. Some really good stuff for all of the data geeks out there. And you can skip to the good parts and the conclusion if you just want the nuts and bolts.
Mm-hmm. Because youths and teens are humans and we're all fooled by our perceptions, we're also learning from cognitive psychology how we think we understand how the world works when we really don't. It raises the question in my mind, is this information, obviously any of the teens can look online at where you told us to go look, but is it shared in a more aggressive way with teens as well to help enlighten them as to what's really going on? Is that part of the plan? Has that been thought about? Is it used?
You know, a couple of years ago, and AYDC was involved in this, and with two of our local high school students and Michael Krosky from Safe and Drug-Free Schools, they participated to create a brochure called Strength of Our Youth, and it took the 2009 Youth Risk Behavior Survey results for Anchorage and built that brochure to communicate to students throughout the school district about all of the positive behaviors that they were engaged in. And we don't have anything like that for the 2011 survey as of yet, and don't have a plan for that. But that's something we definitely need to do is communicate with our youth about how great they're doing and
so they understand what's really going on as far as drinking and alcohol. I mean, they have
absolutely
perhaps some perception, but it's probably more from their immediate peers than maybe what's really going on. And so the information would be helpful. So we have an email, and I think this gets to where I think we're going now. And it says, this is from Jennifer, and she says, I looked at the survey online, and I'm curious as to how the information is being used in our community to drive action. How can I know as a parent or neighbor what I can do that makes a difference?
So I mentioned earlier that Anchorage United for Youth Partners have already been using these strategies to increase protective factors for youth. And this analysis really substantiates that approach and gives us some ideas for where we need to really continue to drive our action moving forward. We know that four of the eight protective factors that were analyzed had the strongest effect on decreasing the likelihood of risk behaviors and also increasing school engagement. And those four were, first, having parents that talk to their children about school every day. And remember, the youth are reporting that their parents talk to them about school every day. The second one is youth that report that they volunteer or help in school or the community. Number three is youth reporting that they are involved in organized after-school activities. And the fourth one is that youth report they have caring and encouraging teachers. So first of all, this tells us that it really does take the entire community to wrap around and support our kids. We know that we need to encourage parents all the way through high school to talk to their kids every day about school. I know that as kids get older, it can seem more and more difficult to talk to our adolescent kids. But they really need it, even if they act like they don't want it or don't need it. They really do. And we saw huge correlation between that particular factor and a decrease in a lot of the risky behaviors. So it's hugely important. We know that we need to do better as a community in providing opportunities for our youth to meaningfully engage in the community, either through volunteer opportunities or connecting with their community in a meaningful way. That has a big impact, and we don't have enough of our kids reporting that they are doing that. So that's one of the trends that we see where we can do a lot better. We need to continue to support after-school activities that are organized for our kids. We simply can't cut funding to these programs. We have to come together as a community and really support opportunities for our kids to do something outside of school. And we need to make sure that the kids that aren't traditionally doing things out of school, that they have access to these programs. So we see some kids that are struggling and they don't have access to programs or they're not participating. And we really need to ask ourselves why and what are the barriers to their participation and what can we do as a community to resolve that. And number four, having caring and encouraging teachers. You know, our school district already does a wonderful job with our kids. Having those caring and encouraging teachers has a huge impact, and so we need to continue to support our teachers.
I have a question for somebody, and it's kind of a side note, because in my practice and work with a lot of teenagers, I don't seem to see, and I've been thinking about this recently, I don't seem to see a lot of kids that are involved in cross-country skiing, running, swimming, any of the individualized sports, gymnastics. And I wonder, I mean, is there any correlation between those activities and the kids not engaging in high-risk behaviors? And I mean, I have some theories on it, but I'm curious as to what you guys might think.
The question in the survey does not differentiate between team sports and individual sports. So no, we don't have any evidence about that. But what we do know from this is that after-school activities in general matter, and that youth are engaged in two or more after-school activities per week, that they are more likely to thrive and avoid risk behavior than those who are not. We know that youth that have supportive adults in addition to their parents are more likely to thrive than those that are not fortunate or, you know, haven't been reached out to. So, going back to the email question, which was an excellent one, and just elaborating a little on what Sarah said, we know how important it is to fund youth-serving organizations to provide after-school activities. We know how important it is for adults to reach out, be mentors, be friends, have acquaintances with, care about youth in addition to their own children. And we know how important it is to provide youth a meaningful opportunity to volunteer or help others. And so those are things that we all can do. With respect to funding, one thing that youth can't do is vote until they're 18. And so we sometimes have to stand up in the political process and say, please continue funding this when funding for critical youth programs is at risk. That just happened with Anchorage Youth Court. And happily, it had a big impact. Youth Court, Campfire, Boys Club, Girls Club, and the library all had their funding restored thanks to the community standing up and saying these programs matter. So we have to continue thinking about that going forward because youth don't vote. We have to be their advocate sometimes.
Yeah, this gets to how do you get across to policymakers who are being bombarded with everybody saying theirs is the most important activity. How do you do that?
That's why having data like this really matters.
Yeah.
Really being able to plop down a bar graph or these other charts and say, this truly matters. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us have anecdotal information. If we talk to other people and say, how did you navigate the teen years? Mm-hmm. Almost always someone will say, my parents and or other supportive adults, you know, and or an encouraging teacher and or after school activities or something I had a passion for. I found that to be the universal five answers. But it is wonderful to go beyond anecdote and have this data. And it does matter. The other thing we know, it's not only matters for kids graduating from high school, for getting good grades, but we know the cost to society of alcohol and drug use. And so if we invest up front in youth in these activities, we are reducing the downstream costs associated with alcohol and drug use. And that makes a lot of fiscal sense.
It seems to me that this information that you've gathered shows that there was benefits being accrued before you guys really looked at all this information. The data shows the trends were improving.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So there's other things going on. Is this true across the nation or is it a local phenomenon?
Well, in terms of the protective factors, we only looked at the local data.
Okay.
So I had no basis of I didn't compare it with the U.S., but just looking at the risk behaviors and comparing our risk behaviors, the rates of our risk behaviors compared to U.S., we're actually doing slightly better in terms of alcohol use, marijuana use, and even binge drinking.
And you know, Anchorage as a community has been coming together. I really think we're a great model for other communities, just in the way that our community partners have come together and to support youth, and really have embraced the idea of positive youth development and strength-based activities to help our youth be successful. You know, we know we have to intervene if kids get off track, if they're engaged in substance use or delinquent or violent behavior. We have to intervene. But our community has done such a great job at coming together around how can we encourage the positive things in our youth's lives so that they are more resilient and they're more likely to make those positive choices and be successful, not just to keep them from doing drugs or alcohol, but to keep them in school and that they're successful. You know, not graduating from high school has a huge economic impact as well. When you look at the prison population and then the percentage of people who are in prison who didn't graduate from high school vastly outnumber those who did. The economic impact it can have in terms of our workforce development, earning potential, it has a huge impact for all of us. So something we all need to care about. So all of this work really informs our 90% by 2020 graduation goal. The way we make funding decisions at United Way of Anchorage, we're investing in these strategies with our community partners so that we are really targeting meaningful opportunities for kids and those opportunities for supportive adults for our kids.
So just like a legislator, United Way is taking the income that they have and seeing where they're going to get the biggest bang for their buck is
Absolutely.
What I just heard you say. And it's easier to decide that with the better information that you have.
Right. And then asking for our partners, you know, if we're going to make that investment, to measure the work that they're doing so that we can see the impact of their work. Measurement is extremely important so that we can see the progress that we're making as individual organizations and as a community.
And that, thinking about Anchorage and Alaska, we've done a lot of things very well. You know, we don't have billboard advertising, right? So youth don't see all of these things advertised. We have, you know, pretty good tough ID laws and other laws that from what's called an environment perspective.
Pretty hard about smoking, too.
And pretty hard about smoking. But what I think we're finding, we found this with smoking because Thad and I worked on tobacco issues very hard over a long period of time. But there are environmental factors, laws and other things that can, you know, get rates down to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And then you get to that tough group, right? We're finding that with tobacco. Right. And so how do you really make inroads into the tougher group? And that's where I believe these factors come to play. That's when you have to give these protective factors, and you also have to have the perception issues. We have some wonderful groups like CMCA working on perception. There is more work that can be done on perception issues. There's more work that can be done on these protective factors, and that's how we're going to reduce these numbers even more. But we should give ourselves a pat on the back in Anchorage and Alaska because we have done some things very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's well said, and I think it makes sense also. The protective factors, was that also something that came kind of canned already as questions from the CDC and the national, or is that something that was developed locally?
A lot of it was developed locally. There is an opportunity for every community to add in some of their own questions. Mm-hmm. And in Alaska, there was a big movement to really include some of those protective factors. A lot because of the passion of the folks here around the importance of that. So measuring the positive factors that our youth have so that we can see how we're doing on those is really important. It is the mindset that we have, and I think that's a great thing about our community.
When you then develop those protective factors, we're only checking those protective factors as being valid protective factors. We are not asking about other possible protective factors. For example, you know, socioeconomic status, mm-hmm. schools you live, where you live, number of kids in a family, and so forth. What do you have to say about that issue?
Well, those are certainly important factors to consider, but unfortunately, those are questions that are not asked in the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey. Mm-hmm. But certainly, if I think the more we know about these factors, I think we should be revising the surveys to include those specific questions.
Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a look at socioeconomic status or where you live in the community or anything
not,
like that?
Not with these reports, but mm-hmm. a lot of what we do in community work is, you know, you have trend lines that you look at to see how you're doing as a community and what the trends are. But then if we see a trend that's not going the way we'd like it to, we have to look at the story behind the curve. So really look at why are these going this way? And that's when we get into some of those into the weeds on, you know, what are some of the socioeconomic factors or other factors that might be causing these trends to go down. And sometimes we narrow it down school by school or area by area. We look at a lot of different demographic breakdowns to really get a handle on why we think kids are doing well or aren't.
You never get to the answer at the end of the question.
No, but
my needling you guys.
We can monitor it and you know, make our best guess on the information that we have and really make some solid decisions on moving forward in our strategies.
Andrew, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hey, doctor. You have a great show. I wanted to, I was curious to hear your guests discuss a couple of things maybe. One, a general discussion regarding a study with respect to, you know, the difference between causation and correlation. Second, I was curious if they distinguished in their study between, you know, substance use and abuse. And third, I was curious if, you know, how that study would compare to, you know, if it had been done, you know, in a European country where attitudes towards drug and alcohol use are, you know, different in some respect or the other.
All right. Andrew, we're getting towards the end, so I'm going to answer your questions off the air. I've got them written down and let you drop off. Is that okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you. All right. Causation and causality was the first thing you had questions about, which is an excellent question.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for your question. This is Gabe Garcia. And, the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey is a cross-sectional survey, so that means the survey was taken at one point in time. Therefore, you can't really do a straight causation in terms of doing the analysis, but you can do a correlation. So the findings that we have are correlation as opposed to causation. However, the strong correlation can help us understand causation, and also the fact that the study that we're doing, we're basing it on a specific theoretical framework that this protective factors can lead to the decrease in risk behavior. So those are the two things that we rely on in terms of doing this analysis.
So, yeah, this is no way you can draw causation. And causation is extremely hard to do, very, very difficult and very expensive. So this is a correlation, but it's pretty good information. What about the question abuse of drugs versus use of drugs? Was that a consideration in the analysis or when you are compiling the data?
There are several different questions in the survey itself. And so one question is about, have you ever used alcohol or have you ever used marijuana? Have you used it in the last 30 days? And in terms of drinking alcohol, there's another question about binge drinking, and it's specifically, have you had 5 drinks
in one sitting?
Mm-hmm. And so we look at each of those different questions. It doesn't ask specifically, do you abuse alcohol? It tries to get more at the actual behavior.
And I told the caller I would remember his questions, and I wrote a note, and I cannot read my note. Anybody remember?
The third one was really interesting. We didn't do it, but it was about comparing it to any European studies that have different attitudes. And so, no, we didn't look at that, but that would be fascinating.
So I guess the bottom line for what I'm hearing you guys saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that kids who are more successful are kids who are kept busy, they are involved in the community, and they are being productive. Does that kind of sum it up?
Well, yeah, and that it's that there are opportunities for us as a community to help them with that. So for parents to talk to their kids every day about school and to communicate that message that alcohol use and marijuana use is not a good idea. For our teachers in our schools to be caring and supportive, for there to be plenty of those opportunities for kids to engage in something meaningful outside of school time, whether it's an organized activity or volunteering or helping in the community. There are opportunities for us to really think about how we as adults, even if we're not parents or educators, how can we support kids? So we've got some great examples of local adults stepping forward to be school business partners, mentor kids,
right.
Volunteer. You can go to 90by2020.org and make a commitment to support kids and find some ideas for supporting kids. Lots of ideas out there, but we need the community to really step up and rally around our kids, continue these positive trends so that more and more of our kids are successful. We've got a 72% graduation rate right now, and it's been going up, which is a testament to all the hard work we've been doing in the community. But we want more of our kids to graduate. So how can we as a community really come together and support them? And so that's what we're getting at, I guess, yeah.
Becky, you're on line one, and we've just got a couple of minutes, but I wanted to get your question.
Actually, Pat, it's not a question. It's in response to your question, and that was, is there any national research or factors that that this survey is drawn from? And the answer is yes. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey back in the early 2000s started to ask questions related to these protective factors, and those factors come from 50 to 60 years of national research.
Looks
at what are the things that contribute. And so that's where those factors came from. And we wanted to see, is it true in Alaska? Is it true in Anchorage?
Okay.
And Dr. Garcia was the first to do this analysis in Alaska.
Okay. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. All right. We had a couple of emails that asking the question about what can schools do better? Should we be doing more to get kids into sports? And what about support staff and so forth? So those are I'm combining two emails.
We do have Anchorage United for Youth partners and United Way working with local schools specifically and finding out how the community can better support the schools. Because teachers are already doing so much, but there are things that the community can do to support support schools and the specific students that need extra supports. So we have two pilot schools, Susitna and Lakehood Elementary Schools, where we're trying to bring additional community supports to. And we're looking at some of the local middle schools that we can get into and bring in the business community. I know Downtown Rotary has partnered with Romig Middle School to really bring in some extra supports. So there are a lot of things we can do to support schools and the students in them.
Having caring and encouraging teachers is crucial. Having supportive support staff is crucial. Having after-school activities that are well-structured and available is crucial. You know, the easiest way to think about this in my mind is it's, you know, growing youth is like growing a plant. You want good fertilizer, you want good water, you want good sunshine. It's not rocket science. But this report just demonstrates what is important, and in fact, it is important. But basically, you know, to thrive, you need good tending, good support, good fertilizer, good water, some sunshine, and then you know you've built the roots to live a productive, positive life for our community and our future.
And it seems like we have some increasing evidence this is a cost-effective thing to be doing.
Very cost-effective.
Thanks very much. This has been an enjoyable and very rapid hour. My thanks to our guests, Deborah Williams, Director of the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition, Sarah Sledge, Director of the Community Action with United Way and Anchorage Youth United for Youth, and Dr. Gabe Garcia of UAA Department of Health Sciences. If you want to continue the conversation, you can go to KSKA on Facebook. Why not tune in next week, November 26th, when Pentus Pemberton is going to be our guest host for me, and he's going to be discussing our mental health issues with teens that are dealing with these things on a daily basis with Robert Rhodes of Counseling Solutions. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.